Welcome to the Babblery, conversations with fascinating people about what fascinates them. This is Suki Wessling, and today's interview was recorded for an article published in Growing Up in Santa Cruz. This interview was recorded for my series of articles, Moms Who Make a Difference, about women who have children and also work to better their communities. I've spoken to Sierra Ryan a few times in her capacity as Water Resources Manager for Santa Cruz County, but this interview took us into new territory. What struck me is that Sierra has been able to find a way to talk about the very difficult problems she faces at her day job in balance with the very difficult forever job of raising a child into this uncertain world. She projects a clear-eyed view of our future while also speaking enthusiastically about raising a new human being who is going to inherit this world and all of our problems. I really felt heartened by this interview. So many of the smart, well-meaning people I know go straight to despair and gloom when they talk about climate change, but Sierra seems to be in total mom mode all the time. Let me explain. Parents know that when you're raising a child, you can't spend all your time thinking about how they'll become a worthless adult, so there's no point in raising them well. No matter how difficult our children may be at 2 or 3, we remain optimistic and focused on a bright future. But often when we're talking about our stewardship of this earth, we fall into that negativity trap. Sierra doesn't. She works to make sure that we have enough water for homes, businesses, agriculture, and nature in Santa Cruz, and that's no small job. But she does it with the optimism of a mom, talking about how her family's many generations in Santa Cruz have weathered all sorts of change. Her daughter will face a place much different from the one that Sierra grew up in, but hopefully it will be just as vibrant. Sierra's working hard to make sure that vision comes true. Listen in. Welcome to my interview with Sierra Ryan, who is the Water Resources Manager for Environmental Health at County of Santa Cruz Health Services Agency, and also mom, which is why we're talking today, all about the ins and outs of being a mom and also being out there in the community. Doing things during a very difficult time to do things out in the community. So welcome, Sierra.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I really love interviewing you about water, and I've done that a couple times. And the reason I love it is that you are just so completely fluent in your subject. And so, you know, a lot of times when people are specialists in something, you talk to them and you have to like, no, wait, what was that? What? Why did you mean? And you're very, very good messenger for what you do.
Well, thank you. That's always nice to hear.
And so, you know, it was interesting. We were talking for the last article I called you about, and you mentioned that you have a 3-year-old.
Yes, indeed. Three and a half now.
Very important to have that half. Okay.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your child.
All right. Well, my daughter, Faye, like I said, she's 3 and a half. She is just an absolute delight, full of energy, full of, optimism and wonder at the world. She's hilarious. She's starting to tell jokes now that are actually kind of funny. She's really into bugs. We have a lot of ladybugs in the backyard this time of year, and she every day after daycare is going out there and looking for them and collecting them and holding them and telling me how much they like her. And I'm a little like, well, maybe they would like you better if you put them back into the grass where you got them. She's like, no. They want me to hold them. she is just an absolute delight. And it's just every day seems better and better.
Yeah. And that's such a great age. I mean, people always said, oh, don't you love having a baby? And I said, I'm going to love it more when they can walk and talk. I loved having my babies, but I just, the preschool years are just so fascinating.
It is. It's so fun. Every day she's like this new and improved person, just learning more all the time. She's really into learning her letters now. And I'm just like, blown away. Like, where did you learn this? How how are you thinking like this? And now that she's able to speak so well, the way she can articulate the inner workings of a 3.5-year-old brain, it's just, you know, they just think so differently than we do and so much less linear. And you know, she draws connections between different parts of her life that I don't see as connected, you know, something she'll have seen on TV and something then she sees in the backyard and, you know, drawing these lines that I don't see. And I really appreciate how much is going on up there all the time. Uh-huh.
And so do you have an example of something that surprised you about?
You know, something that really blew me away just this weekend. When she was born, we were contacted by UCSC. They have a childhood development lab that does research on children. And when she was a baby, we did a couple, we participated in a couple of their studies. And they actually reached out recently. They were doing one on how 3-year-olds perceive life and robots and things like, I guess, things like that. And so this weekend we participated in a study where it was over Zoom and they were asking her a lot of questions about what's alive. And like they showed her an animal and they said, is this animal alive? She said, yes. Is this animal, does it have feelings like you do? And she said, yes. And I was so proud. It's like, yeah, she's got this empathy. She understands. And then they showed her a robot and they asked the same questions. And she responded the same, like, yes, this robot is alive. It has feelings like me. And they showed a picture of an electric razor and they said, is this alive? And she said, yes. Does it have feelings like you? Yes. And I started thinking about, well, of course she thinks that, because look at the shows that we show her. You know, she's watched WALL-E, she's watched Toy Story. We talk to her all the time about how worms are alive and insects are alive and how they have feelings, so you have to be gentle with them. And you know, it started to occur to me that of course there's, how do you draw that line between a worm and an electric razor if you're a 3-year-old? Well, you think that everything is then alive and has feelings like you do. And I don't know, it blew me away and also made me very proud, because I decided, well, I'd rather she think that everything in the world has feelings than nothing.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, it's so interesting with children to watch their changes, like, you know, the whole thing with babies, where young babies don't understand absence, but then suddenly they understand it. And if you go behind a door, they start screaming, where are you? and as they learn each one of these things, you know, it's fascinating. You reminded me, I would have to go back to my notebooks from the time, but we took part in one as well. And I remember being really surprised about something one of my kids did, but yeah, I can't remember what it was. It's really interesting to see someone who doesn't know you and your kids interact with them and tease out things about how they see the world.
Right. It never would have occurred to me to ask those kind of questions, but I was so delighted that I got to be in the room to hear her thoughts on life and empathy and feelings. I thought it was really fun.
So let's switch gears and talk about what you do during the day. So how long have you been working in the area of water? Do you have background in educational background, or how did that happen?
Yeah. I had kind of the typical career path that led me to where I am. A lot of luck as well. I grew up in Santa Cruz, so I you know, grew up with the environmental surroundings and kind of the community connection to place and to the environment that we have here in Santa Cruz. After I graduated, I went to UC Santa Barbara and I went in undeclared. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, but it was pretty, I took an introduction to environmental studies class and I was just so taken. It was so obvious that that was the career path for me. After I graduated from there, I did my master's in environmental sustainability at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. Came back here afterwards, kind of not really knowing what to do with myself, as a lot of people, I think, after after school do. And I ended up getting a job working at Moss-Landing Marine Labs through this research organization based there known as the Central Coast Wetlands Group, where we studied the ability of wetlands to help with ecosystem services such as enhancing water quality, improving water quality, especially coming from agricultural runoff, to provide benefits in terms of flood protection and habitat and all these other things that we value. Wetlands really do provide so much good to people, basically. There's better ways to say that, but I worked there for about 8 years when I saw an opening at the County of Santa Cruz doing as a water resources planner, so doing a lot more kind of regional water supply planning. I ended up getting that position in 2015, and I did that work focusing on kind of regional water supply, looking at the impacts of drought on kind of the county, the municipal water suppliers, as well as people in private wells. Focusing a lot on groundwater sustainability. That's kind of the next generation of water management that we're moving towards in California, and trying to figure out how to leverage, you know, we are a very small county. We don't have a very big population. How do we compete on the statewide level and even on the federal level with areas like the Central Valley and Southern California that have water needs and money needs that maybe could be perceived as outweighing our own. So how do we make our region competitive in bringing in grant funding to help us solve our problems locally? Santa Cruz County, I feel like I have to say this anytime I'm talking to anyone, but we are completely isolated in terms of our water supply. All of our water sources are locally derived. We're not connected to the State Water Project or the Colorado River and anything like that. So it's really important for us locally to be very connected to our water supply. And I think we are, as a region, we have some of the best water conservation practices in the state. The city of Santa Cruz uses something like 45 gallons per capita per day, which is half the state average. So we really are leaders in the field. And I've been really lucky to get to be involved in water in Santa Cruz County in this time where so much is changing. In 2020, my boss retired and I ended up getting hired in his position. So I've been the manager now of our programs at the county for about a year and little under a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's always this conflict between mom and career. How would you describe your feelings about balancing those two?
I've had a lot of conversations about balance, like work-life balance. I can't say that I've yet figured out the secret sauce to making it all work, but I've been fortunate in that my work is flexible. I, especially since COVID, for all of the immense strain that put on trying to balance career and parenting, it did lead to a great increase in flexibility for being able to kind of pivot when you need to be at home for your kid. It's possible to do that without having to take a day off, without having to cancel all of your meetings and let people down. So I would say I've been lucky that the county has been really supportive and been very family friendly, both before I took over as manager and then even since recently. The people I work with have been accommodating when it needs to happen. And I have family in town. I don't quite know how we would do everything without that benefit. And we have my husband and I are very lucky that we have a pretty large and accommodating group of friends who have been able to step up in a pinch. And And other than that, it's just, you know, I really love my job. I love what I do. And I also really love spending time with my daughter. And I'm lucky that I feel like some of the work that I do is really for her. So sometimes when I feel like, oh, I'm working, I've just been working a lot, it's really stressful, I can think like, well, I'm doing this for a reason. I'm doing it for Faye and for her future here. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's always a struggle. And if I ever meet anyone who's actually found a way to balance these, I'd very much like to hear what their recipe is for success.
Well, I can tell you I've interviewed now 2 years worth of moms on this topic and none had a secret recipe, but one by one, they all figured it out, you know, and that's, I'm with you on the family thing, because when my kids were little, my parents lived a 15-minute drive away. Yeah. And so that was so simple. But on the other hand, the people I knew who had to depend on friends made these friendships that were just so strong. So, you know, I realized sometimes I was like, oh, I could just drop them off at mom's. And I'm like, no, you know, maybe I should call so-and-so and see if we can, you know, do a trade or something. Cause I saw that right away, these people, especially women, you know, and this is another thing about this, the modern reality, which is that we still, there is something about the mom role that makes it harder for most women, not all women, to walk away and just be at your job. Do you feel like you can do that? Or do you feel like when you're at your job, you're still part of the way?
You know, you can never be completely untethered when you're the local person. So my husband commutes over the hill every day and I work in town, which means that I always have to have my phone on me when my daughter's anywhere, because if something happens, I'm the one who needs to be able to like act, you know. We've gotten calls from daycare partway through the day saying, oh, Faye's coughing or Faye has a fever, you need to come get her. And you know, it doesn't matter if I'm in a meeting, doesn't matter if I'm presenting before the state assembly, if I need to go pick her up, I need to go pick her up. So it does mean that you can never really disconnect and just focus only on work, because you always need to have your phone on you. You always need to check your texts and be prepared to if not leave at a moment's notice, then to find someone else who can go and do it. So it's a challenge, you know. I'm not sure how much it's based on being the mom as it is being the person who's in town locally, but yeah, it's not possible to fully disconnect. And, you know, the one thing that I've really discovered since having my daughter is just how many other people are in this, you know, in this situation or have been in the past. You know, a lot of the people I work with, their kids are grown now, but they remember. And it was even harder for them. A lot of the women who I work with who were in their later 40s or 50s and 60s, they didn't even have the kind of support that I do, or the recognition that these challenges exist. So
we were supposed to be doing it all.
Yeah. Right?
We were wearing our big floppy bows and our big shoulder pads, and we were like, you know, it's supposed to be different men. I just remember when I was a teenager, my mom went back to school to get a PhD and she had to drive 2 hours to get to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I remember my parents having this discussion, a rather heated discussion. My father's really frustrated. And he says, when I go to work, when I go to work, I still think about the family. My mother's like, welcome to my life.
It's okay. You know, I've been watching the show Severance, which the premise is that they completely sever their personal life and their work life. They almost become two different people. Huh. And I wouldn't want that. You know, at first you love the idea of like, oh, that'd be so great if when I was at work, all I had to think about was work. But no, you need to stay grounded in the reality and the why are you doing this? Why, you know, work is fun, but it's also hard. That's why it's called work. And sometimes you need a bit of a reminder on the rough days, like, you know, why are you doing this? How does this fit into your life? And then you can look at the the terrible paintings that you have all over your office that your three-year-old told you were of a worm and a ladybug. I'm like, okay, well, that's why I'm doing this.
Yeah, and I was going to say, one of the first things that you said was thinking about how your job is for the future. And once you're a parent, your feelings about the future change pretty significantly, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I didn't expect that. You know, my entire education, at least as an adult, has really looked at a sort of bleaker future than the one that we have. And I had somewhat come to terms with that. You know, the impacts of climate change are going to be dramatic, and they're going to impact everybody in ways that we can't necessarily understand yet, although maybe we have a better understanding now than we did 10 years ago or so. But I was kind of okay with that. And then I had Faye, and now all of a sudden, like, oh no, we're going I want her to have every option in the world just the way that I did. And I don't want it to be limited. And so it's true, thinking about what the future could look like, I feel more motivated than I ever did before to make sure that it's bright and positive, and that the problems that we're facing, which are real and significant, but that they're solvable, and I need to do everything that I can to make sure that we solve them to the best of our ability now.
Yeah, that's a great statement of why any of us do what we do when we're parents, is thinking about what we're leaving to our kids and what they're going to face. And I know a lot of people feel some amount of despair, and not just I work with teens, and so I know that a lot of them feel a lot of despair, and I think a fair amount of it is being channeled from their parents, who don't know how to appropriately talk to their kids about the challenges in a way that's inspiring. Because, you know, kids, especially little kids, it doesn't help to scare them with big things that they can't control, right?
Right.
So how do you talk to kids about, how would you recommend talking to kids about climate and about water and the things that you work in a way that makes them feel that feeling of being energized to try to help the future be a brighter one?
You know, that is a really great question, and certainly a challenge that I think we ask ourselves over and over again. In terms of, I think the most important thing first and early is to instill in children a real value for the resources that we have, because, you know, it's going to be up to them in many ways to salvage and to improve upon the decisions that have been made before them, and to be able to face the future that they're being handed. So, you know, with the smaller kids, I definitely would avoid any sort of doom and gloom, and instead just say, you know, isn't this wonderful? Look at this river that you're playing in. Isn't it beautiful? We spend a lot of time just talking about, like, wow, isn't this beautiful? Like, isn't, you see the birds, isn't this fun? And just kind of developing a sense of love and passion for the world, for the resources around them. And then talking about all the ways that things that they can do, the actionable things that they can do. So, you know, Faye knows already, she's only 3 and a half, but she knows we don't leave the water running, we save water. We don't turn on the hose when we're not watering plants. We don't leave the water running in the sink when we're brushing our teeth, that sort of thing. You know, that's easy habits to build now. But as they get older, I think it's important to be honest with them about, you know, that things are changing. And also to try to point out that can be okay too. You know, things are changing. It's going to be different. The forest fires are in particular really hard to talk about because they're so dramatic and it's so upsetting when it's happening. You know, when during the CZU fire, it was really hard to talk about it because I would just start crying. But to to kind of build a sense of understanding that these things do happen. Change happens in the world. Change has always happened in the world. There used to be dinosaurs here and now they're not. It's hard to try to figure out. This is a challenge that I've been facing too, because I think it's really important to explain that things are changing and to try to say it in a way that's not just as bleak as we might feel that it is. Because really, if I think about what my great-great-grandparents, when they came to Santa Cruz County in 1919, it was a completely different place than it is now. Just completely different, almost unrecognizable in many ways. And they might be horrified if they were to see it now. It's not the place that they came to and the place that they loved, and there was change. And I try to use that same mindset. Like, things in the future are going to be different. They're not going to be what I grew up with or even what Faye's growing up with, but that doesn't need to be 100% bad. You know, we can teach her and instill in her the values to protect what she can, to recycle, to save water, don't litter, those kind of basic values. And then just build in some resilience and some appreciation and maybe some perspective that things are changing. My husband's actually a teacher, and he teaches an AP environmental studies class. And this is something that we talk about for his students too, because they're older and they're entering adulthood and really do need to be able to, you can't protect them forever. You need them to understand so that they can make changes and make decisions based on what the world is going to look like as they're aging. So I don't know. That was a little rambly, and I'm not sure it was exactly an answer or a solution, but I think it's something that we're grappling with. And it's,
well, yeah, hard. I mean, it is. It is. And it's a hard thing. And I just, I think it's really important. And I'm sure your husband sees this, that it's really important when it comes to to teenagers and young adults, to emphasize that this is a challenge different from, but in many ways similar to, many existential challenges that humans have come up against, and we've got to meet it. And if past is any guide, we will. I mean, yes. it could be painful for a while, and it will certainly be, if past is any guide, inequitable. Mm-hmm. And that's, another thing that I know a lot of young people, it's so frustrating for them. They do not understand why we can't just fix it. And just, these people are losing their island. Why can't we just fix it? And I remember feeling that, but I feel like that's more positive than them saying, all those islands are just going to go away, so those people are just going to have to move somewhere else, and there's nothing we can do.
One thing I love about, as hard as it is to see young people grappling with these issues, I so appreciate that, they're not, jaded is the word I'm looking for. They still see the opportunities and the hope for making a difference. And I think that's true. When I was pregnant, I remember a woman coming up to me and just saying, the babies that are being born right now, the ones who are choosing to be born, are the ones that are able to face the future. The people being born right now are coming into this world, choosing to come into this world because they are ready to face the future and the challenges that we've presented. And I it's funny. I was like, oh, that's such a Santa Cruz way of thinking. And then also I was like, but I'm taking great comfort in that. So
it is. It's a very Santa Cruz way of looking at it, but also just something I think that just, everything psychologists tell us is that if we don't focus on the positive and believe that we can fix things, then we're just shooting ourselves in the foot. So we just have to believe it, because that's how we function best. So, and I really appreciate that. I wanted to point out for listeners that the article, which I will link in the blog post for this recording, has recommendations from the children's librarians of Santa Cruz County Public Libraries for good books to use at different ages to teach children about water and water conservation. So,
wonderful.
Yeah. I was really, really excited they did that for us. So anyway, I want to thank you, Sierra, so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Babblery. Please visit www.babblery.com for links and information related to this podcast.